Good morning. It's time to read the Mason City Globe Gazette for Friday, December 27th, 2019. I'm Diane, and my partner at the microphone for the next hour is Doris. We're pleased to be with you. This broadcast is made possible through a partnership between the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service and 97.9 FM KCMR Radio. Here are today's headlines on the front page of the Globe Gazette. Game on, esports grow in northern Iowa area. Saragoto moving on new building, engineering and secondary roads department to move. And nearly $2.1 million road project on the horizon for Clear Lake. Today's weather will be times of clouds and sun. The wind, estimated wind, will be 4 to 8 miles an hour, and the high today will be 37 degrees. Tonight, cloudy, late snow up to 1 inch, with winds 17 to 14 miles an hour, and lows at 27. The regional outlook expect 3 to 6 hours of sunshine with average relative humidity of 75% and poor drying conditions. Cloudy tonight with on and off snow late, accumulating up to 1 inch. Chance of precipitation 65% with average relative humidity 80%. Occasional rain tomorrow, little or no sunshine. And now, with the first story, here's Doris.
Game on. Esports grow in northern Iowa area. And there's a couple pictures here of St. Ansgar students practice playing a game called League of Legends. And Belmont Clemmy sports team scrimmaging in their new jerseys. Video games have suddenly become a viable pathway to post-secondary education, with some high school students and esports teams even getting full-ride scholarships to some colleges and universities across the country. Esports, or electronic sports, have been growing in popularity in the North Iowa region, with 5 high schools forming a team within the past year. North Iowa's esports coach Dylan Belvance said the students seem to love having an esports team. He says it's kind of a nice way to help them build teamwork and problem-solving skills in this new time of technology. West Fork freshman Allison Pitzenberger said she wanted to join the esports team because she plays a lot of video games at home, and playing on the team makes it have more purpose. "Doing it for a purpose encouraged me to play more," she said. Pitzenberger said being able to interact with schools from all over the state without having to travel long distances makes the esports tournaments great. She says, "We can just stay right here and stay in our own school, so it's really easy to connect with other schools." Carter Coop, a sophomore and the West Fork esports team captain, said the best part of being on the esports team for him is having a place where he can come in, relax with his friends, and have a place they all enjoy being in. He said, "It's like just one big family where everybody could come in and everybody should feel like they belong, and it gives people a place to come and do what they're passionate about." The social aspect and simply being part of something seem to be key for students, and Bert said some West Fork teachers have noticed some of the esports athletes have been more motivated in the classroom. "Now they have something where they can apply themselves a little bit more. Otherwise, they can't be on the team, so they kind of work harder in the classroom. And now all the college scholarships, they're working harder," he said. At Osage, 2 students have signed national letters of intent to go to college for esports in exchange for academic and athletic scholarships, and another is being actively recruited for another esports scholarship, according to Osage esports coach Chris Kyle. He said, being a program less than a year and having three kids offered scholarships, we're pretty happy and fortunate, I think. So far, the Iowa High School Esports Association is the governing body of the Iowa High School Esports teams, setting up fall and spring seasons and determining which video games will be played. Each season lasts 8 weeks, with four postseason weeks for qualifying teams, like a regular sports season, and teams play a match every week. Not all games have to be a part of the official season, however. Both St. Ansgar and Osage coaches said they were planning on hosting a League of Legends conference tournament March 28th for teams in the Central Rivers Area Education Agency and hope to have at least eight teams participate. Last year, St. Ansgar participated in the High School Esports League Spring Major, League of Legends National Competition, and came out in the top 25 teams out of 97 schools nationwide. When competing in the fall season, the West Fork team finished third out of the 18 teams in the state, playing Super Smash Brothers. Kyle, who is also on the planning team with the St. Ansgar Esports coach Brian Birkedahl, said the association chooses which games to include based on current interest and if it would give the students an opportunity to play games offered at the collegiate level, with League of Legends as the current popular game. This year, the teams vary from 8 to as many as 37 players. North Iowa has 8, St. Ansgar has 16, West Fork has 15, Osage has about 30, and Belmont Clemmy has 37 kids in the sports program. Because there are so many students in each of these programs, the teams are split into varsity and junior varsity teams, similar to other athletic sports. And this year, the association will be offering different schedules for the different levels. At West Fork, Bert said students can get on the varsity team for Super Smash Brothers by challenging one of the players once a week. It's not different than if you want to be the first chair in band or the lead in a play. You just have to keep practicing and get better. And if you're better than somebody else, you get moved into that role, he said. I think that prepares you for life. If you want to be better at something, you have to put more time into it. All five schools started their esports program in the spring of 2019, but starting a new sports team isn't easy. The proper technology and hardware is needed, and students on the team need to practice on the technology and as part of a team. For right now, we only participate in League of Legends because that's all we have the hardware for, Birkedahl said. Eventually, we would like to participate in other games like Super Smash Brothers, Rocket League, and possibly Fortnite, Overwatch. But right now, all we have is the hardware for League of Legends. A common thing for schools to do is to combine purposes for the new computers rather than just use them for esports, since getting the computers that can handle some of the video games can be expensive. West Fork needed new computers for its yearbook and tech pathways classes, both taught by Bert, so the new computers weren't bought, only for esports. However, Bert said the school did also buy them a new Nintendo Switch, controllers, and the Super Smash Brothers game. Osage started its esports team after it added a game design course to its computer science curriculum. Some students started playing games to learn game mechanics, and the esports team was approved by the school board in January. It started with 9 laptops from the computer science program and expanded to 30 by using old computer parts and receiving over $15,000 in grants, Kyle said. Belmont Clemmy also purchased 5 game computers since they have a larger memory and a better screen refresh rate. Morris said building a program is an investment initially. If other school districts are interested in looking into starting an esports program and team, Moak said they can get in touch with the esports coaches in Belmont, Clemmie, St. Ansgar, Osage, West Fork, and North Iowa. We're really an open community, Moak said. We kind of know our way around a little bit, and we'd love to offer advice or anything we can to help somebody else who's wanting to start a program. Diane?
Sarah Gordo moving on new building, engineering and secondary roads department to move. In less than a year from now, Sarah Gordo County's engineering and secondary roads department will likely have a new location to call its own. By fall 2020, the department, which oversees more than 267 miles of paved roads, 700 miles of gravel roads, and 156 bridges, plans to open an administrative building just west of the county's law enforcement center on Lark Avenue. According to County Engineer Brandon Billings, there are limitations with some of the facilities the county currently has that has started to get too cost prohibitive. The building in Clear Lake, roofs on both of the buildings are in horrific shape, and for us to go through the expense of repairing that building, we would invest $1 million out there just to get it back to good conditions, Billings said. Billings went on to add that because of that rough shape, there have been times when the county had to consider whether or not equipment would fit in the building rather than simply if the equipment was best for the job. To allay possible fears that response times would be increased by the move, Billings clarified that delays shouldn't increase because county workers will now be able to highway speed for a good stretch. We can get there quickly instead of trying to navigate through town. Another issue that's been a concern for Billings and county engineer folks is the matter of safety. He said the current location presents a possibility for kids wandering away from a nearby pool and getting hurt. And he said that in at least one instance recently, there were sparks shooting out of a plug-in. Having a new place that's built correctly and is up to code and will give us the ability to respond faster to everywhere else in the county will make us more efficient. At last week's regular session of the Sarah Gordo County Board of Supervisors, the three-member panel opted to move forward on a motion to let design firm Berglund & Krenn finish final designs and prepare the project for bid letting. Board member Chris Watts said that the bid letting for the project should begin soon and groundbreaking should take place in April. According to Watts, money the county would generate from the sale of old engineering properties will help fund the new facilities. And there is a picture of the Sarah Gordo County Engineering, of the current building, and it says the Sarah Gordo County Engineering will move forward with consolidating its offices into one location. Doris?
Nearly $2.1 million road project on the horizon for Clear Lake. The city of Clear Lake will continue its multi-million dollar reconstruction project on Eastern Main Avenue in 2020. The multi-year project, which began in 2017, features street and utility improvements on Main Avenue between 8th Street and 24th Street and is estimated to cost at least $6 million when finished, said Scott Florey, Clear Lake City Administrator. This is a big project, he said. Florey and Jason Petersburg, project engineer at Veenstra & Kim, reviewed the preliminary plan and specifications for the second phase of the project with the Clear Lake City Council at its December 16th meeting. The phase consists of water, storm sewer, sanitary sewer, and pavement improvements on Main Avenue between 14th Street and 20th Street, and is estimated to cost nearly $2.1 million. It will also include 5-foot wide sidewalks and bicycle lanes on the north and south side of the road, Petersburg said. The work is a continuation of the improvements done on Main Avenue between South 20th Street and South 24th Street a couple of years ago. More than half of the project's cost, or $1.1 million, is related to street-related items, according to the draft engineer's estimate from Veenstra and Kim. The rest is split between sanitary sewer at $243,770, storm sewer at $213,879,000, and water main improvements, $277,052, and other items. Petersburg said an estimated $399,000, or nearly 18%, of the project's cost will be assessed against property owners, and the remainder will be paid for by the city. The underground work is scheduled to begin in July 2020, after the 4th of July, according to a schedule provided by Veenstra and Kim. It'd be completed in November 2020. Petersburg said a temporary aggregate surfacing would be used through the winter and paving would begin right away in the spring. The paving is scheduled to be completed by June 2021. Also as part of the project, the city is considering upgrading its street lighting on Main Avenue between South 8th Street and 20th Street. This section is residential, and Flory said the project would provide the city a good opportunity to add light poles that are a far better fit with more established homes and could accommodate banners like on North Shore Drive if desired in the future. It's a very critical segment in Clear Lake, obviously steeped in history with the parade here on Main Avenue, he said. Petersburg presented information to the council about Alliant-owned fixtures and city-owned ones. It would cost about $85,000 to install city-owned light fixtures, which is a $62,462 difference from the Alliant ones. However, there are benefits with the investment, he said. With its city-owned fixtures, Clear Lake would be responsible for maintenance and wiring, but it would be able to install banners and receptacles in the future if it desired. With the Alliant fixtures, the city would pay a monthly rental fee for each fixture that Alliant maintains and wires. Banners and receptacles wouldn't be allowed. Petersburg said Alliant Energy will start burying the overhead primary electric lines on the street in the coming weeks. The City Council will adopt the preliminary plans at its January 6th meeting and initiate the special assessment process. A public information will take place on January 15th at City Hall. Diane?
I have the Cheer Fund donations update as of Monday, December 23rd. We're almost 75% of the way to our goal, but it's crunch time, and families are receiving your contributions, so please keep giving if you can. The more you give, the more we can help, and there are many in our area who need your help. And the total for Monday was $23,484.35. The to-date total as of last Monday was $90,033.75. Since the Cheer Fund began in 1927, more than $3 million has been raised to help about 2,700 North Iowa families. This year's goal is $125,000. The Christmas Cheer Fund was established by Globe Gazette publisher Lee Loomis in 1927, so every child could have a present on Christmas morning. In the years since, it has come to mean a little help at Christmas time to people of all ages. Donations may be dropped off or mailed to the Globe Gazette office at 300 North Washington Avenue, Mason City, Iowa. We guarantee that your gift, no matter the size, will help someone in North Iowa have a better, brighter Christmas, just like every Christmas since the Cheer Fund's founding in 1927. Doris?
The Republicans have announced caucus locations. The Republican Party of Iowa released a list of 1,682 caucus locations for the 2020 caucuses February 3rd. Iowa GOP staff have been on the ground for months, identifying location for every precinct and working with hundreds of volunteers across the state to organize the 2020 caucuses. They also are holding caucus trainings, so precinct chairs and reporters are prepared on caucus night. We are committed to holding another smooth and successful caucus on February 3rd, said Jeff Kaufman, state party chairman. Thanks to the hard work of our staff and hundreds of volunteers and activists across the state, I'm confident we will continue to show the rest of the nation that we take our first-in-the-nation responsibility very seriously. Cerro Gordo's County's locations include Mason City High School, Clear Lake High School, and Rockwell Community Center. You can find a complete list of locations online at iowagop.org. That's iowagop.org. Diane?
And here is Iowa caucuses, and this is a conversation that reporter Jared McNett had with Cory Booker. The question was, so you weren't at the debates on Thursday, and instead you were out campaigning. What do you think was missed by not having your perspective there, and what perspectives did you get from the people you talked to? Booker's response, I didn't watch the debates, so I can't tell you explicitly, but I do know this. We can't be Democrats that are tearing each other down. We've got to find ways to talk about what we stand for. If there are policy delineations, then that's important, but I'm going to be the person always reminding us that we are Democrat. We as Democrats have to come together. The differences between us are small compared to the differences between us and Donald Trump. We've got to unify as a party, and I'm going to be the force in this race that continues to do that and call for that and ultimately make sure we know our strength in that. Question was, almost right after the debates on Thursday, the Democratic National Committee announced thresholds for the January debates, and they were higher still. Do you think that's a good idea? Booker's answer, I think it's clearly a mistake. Iowa has picked people time and time again who weren't polling at 5%. I mean, John Kerry and John Edwards were polling in 6th and 7th place at 4% and 2% and went on to be 1 and 2 in the Iowa caucuses. I think the people of Iowa should be choosing now and not Washington, D.C., DNC leaders. It should be the people of Iowa ultimately making the choice, and they've done a good job in the past. This is not the best process that reflects democratic principles we want to put in place. Reporter's question, during the speech here in Mason City, you talked a little bit about a legislative proposal to scale down on factory farms. Could you talk a little more about the interest behind that push? Booker's reply, it's a lot of my experience. I know that we have an integrated food system, and I know a lot of people are getting hurt, particularly farmers. So I went hard to work with independent family farmers, and we designed legislation that's really good. And if I'm president of the United States, We will get it done and lift up family farmers in America and help them be leaders that are respected and empowered. Doris?
All right. Taking a look back in history, it's interesting to see what's been happening and how many of these things we remember. Today is Friday, December 27th, the 361st day of 2019. There are only 4 days left in the year. Today's highlight in history, on December 27th, 2001, Defense Secretary Donald H. Rumsfeld announced that Taliban and Al-Qaeda prisoners would be held at the U.S. Navy base at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. Also on this date in 1822, scientist Louis Pasteur was born in Dole, France. In 1831, naturalist Charles Darwin set out on a round-the-world voyage aboard the HMS Beagle. In 1904, James Barrie's play titled Peter Pan, The Boy Who Wouldn't Grow Up, opened at the Duke of York's Theater in London. In 1945, the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund were formally established. In 1949, Queen Juliana of the Netherlands signed an act recognizing Indonesia's sovereignty after more than three centuries of Dutch rule. In 1958, American physicist James Van Allen reported the discovery of a second radiation belt around the Earth in addition to the one found earlier in the year. In 1968, Apollo 8 and its three astronauts made a safe nighttime splashdown in the Pacific. In 1979, Soviet forces seized control of Afghanistan. President Hafizullah Amin, who was overthrown and executed, was replaced by Babrak Karmal. In 1985, Palestinian guerrillas opened fire inside the Rome and Vienna airports. 19 victims were killed, plus four attackers who were slain by police and security personnel. American naturalist Diane Fossey, age 53, who had studied gorillas in the wild at Rwanda, was found hacked to death. In 1994, four Roman Catholic priests, three French and one Belgian, were shot to death in their rectory in Algiers a day after French commandos killed four radicals who'd hijacked an Air France jet from Algiers to Marseille. In 1995, Israeli jeeps sped out of the West Bank town of Ramallah, capping a seven-week pullout, giving Yasser Arafat control over 90% of the West Bank's 1 million Palestinian residents and one-third of its land. In 2002, a defiant North Korea ordered UN nuclear inspectors to leave the country and said it would restart a laboratory capable of producing plutonium for nuclear weapons. The UN nuclear watchdog said its inspectors were staying put for the time being. 10 years ago, Iranian security forces fired on Tehran protesters, killing at least eight and launching a new wave of arrests. 5 years ago, North Korea blamed its recent internet outage on the United States and hurled racially charged insults at President Barack Obama over a hacking row involving the movie, quote, The Interview. Mehmet Ali Agca, the Turkish gunman who shot and wounded John Paul II in 1981, laid white flowers on the saint's tomb in St. Peter's Basilica. And just 1 year ago, LeBron James was selected as the Associated Press Male Athlete of the Year for the third time, after reaching the NBA Finals for the eighth consecutive year. Richard Overton, the nation's oldest living World War II veteran, who was also believed to be the oldest living man in the U.S., died in Texas at the age of 112. Diane?
And now we turn to the obituaries. Today, we are remembering Ruth J. Erickson, Helen Rule, Pamela Eckelbarger, David L. Back, Dorothy Stafford, Kathleen K. White, Nellie Osborne, John F. Haller, Helen Bruns, Nathan Pontkin. Ruth J. Erickson, age 94 of Belmont, died Wednesday, December 25th, one day short of her 95th birthday at Bellhaven Assisted Living in Belmont. Funeral services are Saturday, December 28th at 10:30 a.m. at St. Olaf Lutheran Church, west of Belmont. The Reverend James Gochenhauer, I apologize, will be officiating. Burial will be in the Belmont Cemetery. Visitation will be Friday from 5 to 7 p.m. at Andrew's Funeral Home, 516 First Street Southeast in Belmont. And the visitation will continue 1 hour prior to the funeral at the church on Saturday. Memorial suggestions in Ruth's memory may be directed to St. Olaf Lutheran Church or to the 1930s farmstead complex of the Belmont Arts Council, Belmont Historical Society Museum, or to Ruth's family for their discretion. Ruth J. Baker, the daughter of Guy D. and Mildred Zook Baker, was born December 26, 1924, at her parents' farm in rural Belmont. Ruth's early years of schooling were spent at the District No. 2 Belmont Township Country School, where she attended through the eighth grade. She later attended and graduated from Belmont High School in the class of 1942. Ruth continued her post-secondary education at NIAC and completed normal school teacher's training at UNI. Being a consummate learner and having a passion for education, Ruth went on to receive her Bachelor of Arts degree in education at Drake University in 1963. Ruth was united in marriage to Robert James Erickson on June 17, 1945, at her parents' home along the west branch of the Iowa River, just north of Belmont. The couple's union was blessed with 4 children, including 2 sons, James and Jeffrey, and 2 daughters, Becky and Beth. One of her favorite memories was the surprise of not knowing the gender of each of these precious little gifts. She absolutely relished the role of motherhood and strived tirelessly to provide a nurturing and loving upbringing to each of them. She loved her partnership on the farm with her husband Bob and all the journeys their life together brought along the way. She enjoyed helping with the farming tasks, working in their garden, raising bountiful produce and beautiful flower beds. Ruth truly loved the outdoors and all the wonders that came with it, whether it was one of the many family fishing trips to Leech Lake in Minnesota, and afternoon of mushroom searching in the backwoods of the family farm, or peacefully strolling and listening to the sounds of the animals, or an evening with family and friends around the fire, sharing stories and wonderful foods. She enjoyed the solitude of watching the turkeys, deer, and songbirds at their home that they had built in the grove south of Belmont. Ruth's family reflects fondly on great memories of evenings filled with freshly popped popcorn, surrounding the television with one another, the annual family cookie bake-off, and so many other family occasions too. Ruth and Bob were both shared the love of sports and had attended many Twins games over the years. At age 92, Ruth had even offered her advice to the team in an interview that was done. She loved to attend and support her kids and grandkids in all their many extracurricular activities and relished the role of being one of their 2, number 1 cheerleader was Bob, in life. Ruth loved her pets over her lifetime, including her kitties, Sheba, and her present sidekick, Tigger. And in earlier times on the farm, her dogs, Brownie, and police dog, Rennie. Ruth loved music, especially the sounds of the 40s and 50s, and dancing the night away with Bob over the years. She loved the old bands of the era and enjoyed patriotic music and operetta. She had wonderful culinary and baking skills and loved to make eats from her garden, and there was always pleasant and delicious aromas in her kitchen. She looked forward to hosting both family and friends in her homes, and most certainly they would not be allowed to go away hungry. Ruth was very meticulous in all that she did during her life, be it her maintaining her weedless garden, flower and vegetable gardens, doing needlework and sewing, keeping a spotless home, and coordinating her wardrobe. Ruth taught school initially at Sheffield schools and then spent the remainder of her nearly 35 years of teaching at Belmont Community Schools. Though she retired from the profession, Ruth never truly retired from educating and self-learning. She taught her grandchildren and great-grandchildren many important life skills and traits. She taught Bible lessons for many years and was the church secretary for a time. Ruth had given her time, knowledge, energies to countless organizations including the Belmont Library, Belmont Hospital Ladies Auxiliary, the WELCA at her church, volunteering at the Prairie Homestead Farm, was a 4-H leader in both Wright and Franklin counties, and had taught adult education classes at the Little Red Schoolhouse for 7 years through a government-funded program. She kept her mind sharp and relaxed by her love of reading the poetry classics, including poets such as Longfellow, Joyce Kilmer, Robert Frost, and others. Ruth had been activities such as the Home Study Club and various state and local teachers' organizations, and enjoyed many years playing in many different ladies' bridge card clubs. She loved anything that included times in the presence of her family, an afternoon conversation with friends over a freshly brewed cup of coffee, and many homemade sweets of the Benke Pharmacy. Those who had the opportunity to cross her life's footsteps will reflect upon her love of family, belief in lifelong learning, focus on faith, and straightforward philosophies, and her innate abilities to absorb and enjoy the special moments that she was a part of during this chapter of her life. Doris?
Okay. Helen Rule, age 80, of West Des Moines, will be honored with a funeral at 11 a.m. Saturday, December 28th, at New Hope Assembly of God Church in Urbandale, Iowa, with Pastor Jeff Hill presiding. Interment will be at Pleasant Valley Cemetery, Swaledale, at 3 p.m. on Saturday. Visitation will be 1 hour before the service at the church in Urbandale. Helen Elaine Rule was born May 18, 1939, in Minneapolis, Minnesota, the daughter of Harry W. and Emma Bornholt Moberg, and passed away December 21, 2019, at the Pella Comfort Hospice Home in Pella, Iowa. After high school, Helen graduated from Hamline University in St. Paul and began her nursing career at Park Hospital in Mason City, Iowa. She later became the director of nursing at Mercy Hospital in Mason City. On July 20, 1963, Helen was united in marriage with Jimmy Rule in St. Paul. They made their home on the farm near Nora Springs, Iowa, and she stayed home to raise their two children and help on the farm. She later worked as director of nursing at the Oakwood Care Center in Clear Lake and as a nurse consultant for ABCM Corporation in nursing homes throughout the state. Helen and Jimmy traveled across the Midwest for Wycliffe Associates, raising funds and awareness about Wycliffe Bible translators. They moved to Dallas, Texas to work for GIAL, a linguistic school for Bible translators. Retirement brought them to Des Moines to be closer to family. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to New Hope Assembly of God to be used in community outreach. The funeral arrangements may be visited again at www.retzfh.com. Diane?
Pamela Joy Eckelbarger, age 68, of Mason City, died on Monday, December 23rd, at her home. A private family service will be held at a later date. Memorials may be directed to the family of Pamela Eckelbarger. Online condolences may be left for the family at www.majorericksonfuneralhome.com. Pamela Joy Eckelbarger was born September 21st, 1951, in Sioux City, to parents Robert V. and Shirley Lane Eckelbarger. Pamela attended Charles City High School and was a member of the orchestra where she played the cello. Upon graduating high school, she went on to attend the University of Northern Iowa, graduating with a degree in secondary education. Pamela's first teaching job took her to Australia, teaching in a boarding school for boys. After teaching there for 3 years, she moved back to the Midwest and began teaching at an Indian reservation in Omaha, Nebraska. Sometime later, Pamela moved back to the North Iowa area, settling down in Mason City, working as a cook at the Country Kitchen, later going on to work for Comprehensive Systems until she retired. Pamela had many joys in life. She loved to read, do needlepoint, learn about Native American culture, horses, and her dog, Honey Bunch. Arrangements are with Major Erickson Funeral Home and Crematory, 111 North Pennsylvania Avenue, Mason City. And again, the services will be held at a later date. Doris?
Kathleen K. White, age 96, of Airedale, Iowa, passed away Wednesday, December 25th at the Rehabilitation Center in Belmont. Funeral services will be held at 2 o'clock p.m. Friday, December 27th, 2019, at the New Hope United Methodist Parish in Airedale, Iowa. Visitation will be from 1 to 2 o'clock p.m. prior to the service at the church. Burial will take place in the Dumont Cemetery. The Sitzema Vogel Funeral Home of Hampton is handling the arrangements. They can be reached at www.sitzemavogelfuneralhomes.com or 641-456-3232. Memorials may be directed to the New Hope United Methodist Parish in Airedale. And Dorothy H. Stafford, age 92, of Mason City, passed away Monday, December 23rd at her home. Private family graveside services will be held at Memorial Park Cemetery. There will be no visitation. Arrangements are with Major Erickson Funeral Home and Crematory, and that they can be reached at 641-423-0924. Nellie Osborne, age 91, of Belmont, passed away Wednesday, December 25th, 2019, at Concord Care Center in Garner. Funeral arrangements are pending with Major Erickson Funeral Home in Belmont at 111 Lewix Lane South in Belmont, Iowa. And John F. Haller, age 90, of Mason City, died Wednesday, December 25th, in Mason City. Funeral arrangements are incomplete with Hogan Bremer Moore Colonial Chapel, and they can be reached at colonialchapels.com. Diane?
David L. Back, age 64, formerly of Clemmy, Iowa, most recently of Hayfield, Minnesota, died December 21st at his residence in Hayfield, Minnesota. Visitation will be Saturday, December 28, at Andrew's Funeral Home, 528 East Main Street in Clemmy, Iowa, from noon to 2 p.m. A service will be following the visitation at 2 p.m. at the funeral home in Clemmy, followed by a luncheon and time of fellowship at the Clemmy Community Center. Those wishing to express their sympathies through a memorial in Dave's name may direct them to Dakota Back, in care of Dakota Back, 801 North 12th Street, Clear Lake, Iowa, 50428. David Leback was born July 8, 1955, in Mason City, Iowa, to Linford and Carmen Cluckholm Back. He grew up in the Clemmy area, where he was baptized and confirmed in the United Church of Christ in Clemmy. He attended Clemmy Community Schools, graduating from Clemmy High School in the class of 1973. David was very active in the extracurricular activities of school, participating in track, football, basketball, and baseball. Following high school, David was employed with Clear Lake Paint and Repair for 18 years, doing water tower painting, maintenance, and repair. In 1988, he opened a restaurant tavern in Clemmy called 106 West Main, where he helped host the Clemmy Centennial. He later went on to be a car salesman in the Des Moines area for Dewey Ford, then did painting, before working for a number of years for Blattner Energy Corporation, where he retired from in 2013. He was united in marriage to Denise Haynes January 20, 1990, in the Little Brown Church in Nashua. Soon after, they moved to Des Moines, Iowa, where their son Dakota Back was born on March 18, 1994. Dave loved keeping up on politics and was a diehard sports fanatic, especially the Iowa versus Iowa State games. But nothing made him happier than his family, especially his grandchildren and great nieces and nephews. Keeping up on their lives was important. He loved nothing more than gathering with family and friends over a good beer, barbecue, tossing some bags, and drinking a few beers. Dave enjoyed taking his sons fishing and watching sports with him, and we're looking forward to the Hawks bowl game on Friday. He loved burning, was an excellent cook, loved time spent in the presence of his family and friends, and had a great knack for selling, and had used this gift in selling cars and steaks over the years. He loved to cook breakfast for his grandson and always loved to tease. He had a great wit and unique sense of humor and was always full of life advice. He was always willing to lend a hand to those who needed one. And again, the Andrews Funeral Home of Clemmy, Iowa, is in charge of arrangements. Doris?
Helen J. Bruins, age 88, of Belmont, passed away Wednesday, December 18th at Bellhaven Assisted Living in Belmont. Funeral services will be held at 1 o'clock p.m. Monday, December 30th at Ewing Funeral Home, 111 Lewix Lane South in Belmont. Burial will take place at the Amsterdam Cemetery in Goodell. Visitation will be held Sunday, December 29th from 4 to 6 p.m. at Ewing Funeral Home in Belmont, and will continue 1 hour prior to services at the funeral home on Monday. Helen Giretta, daughter of James and Marie Frickson Shelton, was born on April 11, 1931, at home in Hancock County. Helen grew up in and attended school in Kanawha. She graduated in 1948. Helen worked at her mother's cafe, the coffee shop, and was confirmed at Kanawha Methodist Church. On June 20, 1948, Helen was united in marriage to Stanton Bruins at her parents' home in Kanawha. Stan and Helen raised their three sons and lived on the Bruins family farm for 57 years before moving to Belmont in 2005. Helen enjoyed crossword puzzles, quilting and sewing, embroidery and reading. Family was most important to her. She loved spending time with all of her grandchildren. The Ewing Funeral Home at 111 Lewis Lane South in Belmont is in charge of arrangements. Diane?
Nathan F. Ponskin, age 87, of Galt, passed away Wednesday, December 25th, at the Clarion Wellness and Rehabilitation Center. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. on Monday, December 30, at the United Church of Christ Congregational, 121 3rd Avenue Northwest in Clarion, with Pastor Bill Kim officiating. Burial will take place at Evergreen Cemetery in Clarion. Visitation will be held prior to the service at the church on Monday, beginning at 9 a.m., and the Ewing Funeral Home is in charge.
Arctic ice atop snow leaves reindeer starving. Thick reindeer fur boots and a fur hat covering most of his face shielded Nila Inga from freezing winds as he raced his snowmobile up to a mountaintop overlooking his reindeer in the Swedish Arctic. His community herds about 8,000 reindeer year-round, moving them between traditional grazing grounds in the high mountains bordering Norway in the summer and forests further east in the winter, just as his forebears in the Sami indigenous community have done for generations. But Inga is troubled. His reindeer are hungry, and there's little he can do about it. Climate change is altering weather patterns here and affecting the herd's food supply. He said, if we don't find better areas for them where they can graze and find food, then the reindeer will starve to death. Already pressured by the mining and forest industry and other development that encroaches on grazing land, Sami herding communities fear climate change could mean the end of their traditional lifestyle. Diane?
And now, turning to the sports page, the headline reads, North Iowa's undefeated. There are seven area basketball teams perfect going into 2020. And there's a large picture of Clear Lake's Sarah Faber as she attempts a floater over Mason City's Emin Hollander earlier this season in Mason City. And then a smaller picture of West Hancock's Rachel Lehrer and Forest City's Aaron Kaler battling over a loose ball during a game earlier this season. As the boys and girls high school basketball teams take a break from the action to revamp, recover, reevaluate, and re-energize, seven North Iowa teams might want to leave things just the way they are. Four North Iowa girls teams join only 20 others statewide, while three area boys teams join 31 others that ended play last Friday with victories and an unblemished record. Here are the teams undefeated in North Iowa. In girls basketball, we start with Clear Lake. The Lions started the season with a dominating 63-27 victory at home against Charles City and have been steamrolling opponents ever since. In its seven straight wins, Clear Lake has outscored its opponents 499-212, defeating teams by an average of 41 points a contest. The only really close game the Lions have had this season was against Mason City on that road. The next undefeated girls team is West Hancock. With the memory of a 76-52 loss to Newell Fonda in the 2018-19 state title game still fairly fresh in their minds, the West Hancock girls basketball team started this season with a goal of taking the final step and bringing back a championship to Britt. That quest has started with the Eagles going 8-0 in the holiday break with a tough 46-41 win at West Branch to open the season, and then 7 games where they completely dominated play. With an offense that averages just over 71 points a game and a stifling defense that allows a paltry 36 points a game, the Eagles seem to have found the perfect recipe to make it back to the state tournament. The third undefeated girls team is Hampton Dumont Cal. The Bulldogs haven't blown out their opponents so far this season with 2 games decided by a total of 6 points, but still they've beaten opponents by an average of 18 points in going 6-0. Against St. Ansgar, the Bulldogs jumped out to a 25-16 first period lead, then experienced cold shooting the second period to manage just a 32-29 halftime lead. The Bulldogs then had to stave off the Saints for a 4-point win. In its last game, the Bulldogs downed Webster City 58-44 to improve 7-0. And in their December 17th game against Humboldt, the Bulldogs fell behind early and then clawed their way back for a 44-42 victory to remain perfect on the season. And the final undefeated girls North Iowa team is Bishop Garrigan. The Golden Bears are 8-0 going into the break, dominating opponents in every game this season with an average of 43 points per game. Only 2 games were decided by fewer than 24 points, with the last game at North Union being the closest with a final of 73-57. And now, turning to the boys, the Osage boys, the Green Devils, started the season with a resounding 73-19 win over Newman Catholic at home and have outscored opponents 414 to 202 this season, and they've kept 2 teams to under 20 points. In its last game on December 20th, Osage was held well below its season average, but a stifling defense was the key to a 45-29 victory at Nashua Plainfield. And West Fork, the Warhawks, began the season on a high note, defeating a tough Clear Lake team 76-70 in a game that saw the Lions take an early lead only to lose it. West Fork, 7-0, then made quick work out of its next 5 opponents until hosting St. Ansgar in a 61-57 thrilling win on December 20. The Warhawks have Now the final boys, undefeated boys team, is the Algona Bulldogs, and they've started the season with a 6 consecutive victories, including a thrilling 50-48 win at Bishop Garrigan on December 14. In that game, the 2 undefeated teams played a spirited game that went down to the wire. In the final minute, the game could have gone either way. After Algona senior Wyatt Weniger tied the game at 48-48 with seconds left to play, 2 Bishop Garrigan fouls led to 2 out of 4 made free throws at the winning moments to give the Bulldogs the win. Doris?
That brings us to the end of the reading of the Mason City Globe-Gazette for Friday, December 27th, 2019. Your readers have been Diane and Doris. This broadcast has come to you through a partnership between the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service and 97.9 FM, KCMR Radio. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of IRIS or KCMR. Thank you for listening and stay tuned for today's reading of the Des Moines Register. You are listening to IRIS, your 24-hour radio reading service. Have a great day.